On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Okay, let's take our lumps first. As a nation, the headlines and health reports scream at us, we are fat. Chubby, tubby, obese, double-wide, love-handled, heavyweight snack masters. And we don't like it. Consumer Reports says 90 million Americans are dieting right now, with an average goal of losing 37 pounds. Hold the fries. Now, health and science writer Gina Colata says maybe we should hold the angst, too, that our obsession with weight, dieting, and getting thin is fighting nature. Up next on Point, supersized nation, diets, self-image, and living with the American waistline. Joining me now from New York is Gina Colata, science writer for the New York Times. She's author of Ultimate Fitness, The Quest for Truth About Exercise and Health. Her new book is Rethinking Thin, The New Science of Weight Loss, and the Myths and Realities of Dieting. Gina Colata, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you. It's so terrific to be on the show.
It's wonderful to have you. So look, we're told that too many of us are walking heart attacks. And then I'm kind of hearing you, reading you here saying, well, that's okay. Is it really?
It's not. What I'm really trying to say is that everybody has a biological limit to how low they can go. I'm not saying don't bother about it, because for some people there really is a health issue. And sometimes losing just a little bit of weight can make a giant difference in how healthy they are. Like it's like a tipping point for diabetes for people who are genetically predisposed. And maybe a man might weigh 240 pounds and his blood sugar starts to go up.
Yeah.
If he went down to 230, he'd be okay. But people would look at him and say, oh, he's still fat. Why doesn't he just get some control of himself? What science has been finding over a period of decades, and the evidence has been building, is that everybody has a range of weights that each person's own body is comfortable with. And if you go much below that range, your body fights back. Your metabolism slows way, way down, and you get voraciously, incredibly hungry. I mean, just ravenous. It's like a primal hunger. Mm. And before you know it, you're saying, oh, geez, you know, I was such a failure. I fell apart. I had a binge. It's actually a drive as strong as the drive to drink water when you're thirsty, or to, if you're holding your breath, you suddenly have to take a gasp of air.
Right. That's pretty irresistible.
It's not something that people can so easily control. And the problem we have is not that people aren't trying to lose weight. As you just mentioned, people are desperately trying to lose weight. It's that people feel that that they're not going to be attractive, acceptable, or whatever, until often they're trying to get to a goal weight which is below what their body will accept. It's like, I like to run. I can never run a 4-minute mile. I cannot ever do it. That's my biological limit. I know what it is. But with weight loss, people feel that anybody can be as thin as they want, and that's the problem.
Yeah, but wait a minute. We read report after report about how American weight keeps going up. I'm looking at fever charts here, and the lines go up and up and up, really for every age group. Kids famously more obese than others. Look at photographs, I don't know, of people building the Transcontinental Railway, or our own parents, our own grandparents, that they don't have the kind of double-wide profile that so many Americans have today. So what do you mean there's a biological limit?
Well, there's genes that are involved, and they know a lot of the genes. But there's also environment, of course, and environment has affected a lot of things. Like, weight is almost as strongly as inherited as height. During the Civil War, the average height of a Civil War soldier was 5'5", and these men were skinny, skinny, skinny.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, oh, well, how come men are so tall today? Isn't it, if it's genes, why are they so tall? Well, they're so tall because they have enough to eat. The environment has changed. The environment has changed for all of us. The problem is, how much fatter are people? Believe it or not, on average, it's just 5 to 7 pounds in the past couple decades. But we all focus on the really fat people and say, oh, look, we're all fat. And then the other question is, what is it in the environment that made a difference? And there honestly, everybody has a hypothesis, and nobody has anything that goes kind of beyond it. And it's really a hard question, because you'd say, when does the environment do this to you?
But when you say environment, you mean groaning shelves at the supermarket full of Twinkies, or what?
Not necessarily. People are looking at different places now. They're saying, what about the prenatal environment? For example, about 15 studies found that when women smoked during pregnancy, their children as adults got fat. So there's so many factors that it could be, and there's so many times in life where it could be acting, that at this point there really is no answer. It's clear that people are fatter. They're also living longer. They're much healthier. Every disease is down in incidence and going down and occurring later in life. Disabilities are occurring later. So it's not that we're a sick nation, but we are definitely a fatter nation.
You spend a lot of time looking at how people try to diet, our sort of endless interaction with dieting, and you really opened my eyes.
It's hard, isn't it?
I've gained weight, so I want to lose some. But you stepped way back and said, look at what we're doing here, sort of torturing ourselves over a whole lifetime to try and lose that weight. On the other hand, it's to be a little lighter is often a little healthier. It might feel a little better. So what's wrong with the dieting goal?
I don't think there's anything wrong with the dieting goal. The real problem is where you think you should end up. It was really an eye-opener for me because I followed some people, four people who were in a national study comparing Atkins to low-calorie.
Mm-hmm.
And these people, three of them were in Atkins and one was in low-calorie. No, wait, excuse me, I'm getting it wrong. Anyway, these people were, I followed them and they told me their stories and they told me about how hard they were struggling. And actually, three of them were in low calorie, one was in Atkins. Anyway, and at the end, they all lost a lot. It was a 2-year study, and during the first year, everybody lost a lot of weight. One guy lost 65 pounds. He's so excited. He says, oh, I look good. Well, in the second year, their own biology kicks in. These controls operate kind of over a long term. They had gotten lower than their body was willing to let them be. And the weight came back. What was really interesting is these were people who had dieted their entire life. And they went into the study saying, this is it. The federal government is throwing everything they can at us.
Yeah.
We are going to get really thin and we're going to stay there forever. This is it. By the time the study was over, after 2 years, they had sort of come to peace with things. Like one woman said, well, she said, I'm a lot healthier now. She said she used to start out her day by getting donuts and coffee and pouring in a lot of cream. She used to not exercise. She's totally changed her eating habits. She exercises. And as for her weight, she said, okay, she says, we're not going to lose the 50 to 100 pounds. She said, I may not be that poster child for dieting, but I am very happy. I am still 212 pounds. Now, she was 5'4", down from 223 when I first signed up, but I'm much healthier. And why can't a woman be 212 pounds? There is another guy who—
212 pounds, 5'4"
she
tall.
She cannot get—she's healthier.
You're our big science writer, and you're saying that's okay? I mean, it sounds—
Because for her body, she can't get thinner. That's what you have. It's hard to accept.
Mm-hmm.
But when you follow these people, I sort of got caught up in it, too. I said, oh, they're all going to be thin. Then you realize what the science has said was being played out in their stories.
Well, is that proven? What do you mean she can't
That
the body won't allow it to be lower?
Because everybody's got a weight that their body will go to. I'll bet you couldn't lose—I don't know whether you're fat or thin, but I bet you couldn't lose 50 pounds and keep it off. I bet you couldn't.
50 pounds is a taller—I don't think—
Well,
that's
what you're asking her to do. You're asking her to do that. It's really, really hard because there's a reason she weighs 212. I couldn't weigh 212.
But I'm 6'4 and about that weight. So, you know, that's
a
different story.
Well, that doesn't matter. I weigh so much less than her that you wouldn't even believe it. And I could never get to her weight.
Yeah.
Because your body, when you try to get the top of your natural range, your metabolism speeds way, way up. And food makes you feel sick. There's a reason why your body is like keeping you in this range that you can't control. People who were adopted as infants and never knew their biological parents at age 40 had body weights like their biological parents. Twins who were identical twins reared apart ended up with the same weights, the same fat folds. It's not so much under your control as you want. There's another guy, Carmen, who'd been on every single diet you can ever imagine. He went on this diet. He was one of the—
5'11", 265 pounds.
Right. Yes. And he was interesting, too. He thought he was going to lose everything this time. It was going to be all over. And now he says he doesn't realize he has that kind of control. He said, in your brain, you say, I've got 100% free will. I have total control over what I eat. But in the experience of my life, in the experience of my day, in the experience that had been thrust upon me, I don't have that control. And then he said, He knows the day will come when he will want to diet again because he gained all his weight back.
Yep.
He said, there are those moments when you say, I couldn't go on a diet now for love or money. And then there are those times when you say, now's the time, I'm going to do it again. I'll probably be one of those people who diet for the rest of their lives. Or let's not call it dieting. Mm-hmm. Let's call it monitoring. I'll be monitoring my weight for the rest of my life. And then he said, you know, weight isn't the worst thing in the world. Thank God I just have to monitor my weight. That's the least of my problems. Carmen is on another diet now. He is. He's lost like 30 pounds. He's feeling great. He's so excited. And you could look at him and say, come on, Carmen, get real. But you know what? He feels good. And I don't think he's going to keep off any 65 pounds, and neither does he. But that doesn't mean that some weight loss doesn't make him feel better. And that doesn't mean you should say, give it up, never try. It just means be realistic. We're all different. Just, yeah. You know, there are people who are the world's fastest runners. There are people who get by on 3 hours of sleep a night. We all accept different limitations.
And people who don't. It is in the air all over the place, weight and weight loss. Kirstie Alley in Showtime's Fat Actress, the show. Here's a little bit where she talks to her agent, Sam, who wants her to do television ads for Jenny Craig. She wants something more.
Is it so much to ask if I have my own television show again, since that's what I do for a living?
The reality is, if you want to get your own show, you're going to have to lose some weight.
Well, why can't I just get a show first and then lose the weight?
That's not the way it works, my friend.
You know what, my friend? It does work that way with the guys. I mean, look, John Goodman's got his own show, and Jason Alexander looks like a frickin' bowling ball. And then how about James Gandolfino? He's like the size of a whale. He's way, way, way fatter than I am.
There's television. The next thing you know, Kirstie Alley with Valerie Bertinelli from Touched by an Angel is in a real-life Jenny Craig ad.
Have you called Jenny yet? That was good, Valerie.
There it is, the fiction and the fact. Gina Colati, you say that we spend a lot of our time in a moral panic about our weight.
People are told that they're terrible people, they're weak-willed. If they just had any self-control or any self-respect, they would be thin. Fat people are blamed for the costs of health care. Oh, they're so expensive, we're all paying for them. They're the butt of jokes. I looked at greeting cards, and every greeting card that was supposed to be funny, it seemed either made fun of old people or fat people. Like, you open it up, I have a big birthday surprise for you, and you open the card, and there's a fat woman jumping out of a birthday cake. It's very, very difficult to be fat in this country. And the funny thing was that when I was writing my book, Rethinking Thin, I was sitting in on the sessions with the dieters where they were being counseled about weight loss, and they were asked about their images of fat people. Now, these people had to be obese to be in the study. They were saying, when I see a fat person walking down the street, I say, look at them. You know, can't they get control of themselves? Unbelievable. You know, you get to the point where even the people who are fat don't like fat people. One guy said, Carmen again, he went into a store, a department store. He says he looks for some pants in size 38 or whatever he was wearing. They didn't have any there. He said they don't want fat people in this store. It's really, really hard because we've become a society that's extremely judgmental, and we keep setting the bar lower and lower on what people should look like, how thin they should be, and fewer people can make it. So we have many people saying, this isn't the real me. I can't buy clothes because I'm too fat, or I shouldn't look like this. I'm weak-willed. If I could remake the world, I would say, look, you know, we all look different. We're different heights. We can look great at different weights. We can be healthy, we can be happy, and we can buy clothes. It's not a just society.
This is hard to get away from. Yeah, no, we hear it. It's not fair, but there's all these concerns about health. We're going to hear in a few minutes from a doctor who says, you better keep your weight in a healthy zone. We've got a lot of callers who want to join you, Gita. Let me begin to turn to them. Michael's calling from Southampton, Massachusetts. Michael, what do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. I'm calling. It's interesting to hear what Gina's saying in terms of really addressing the problem from the side of the person as commodity. But I think it's really only half the story. You asked earlier, what about our old world ancestors?
Yep.
Do they suffer from obesity? Is this really an American phenomenon? And I think I'd like to draw listeners' attention to the other side of the problem, which has to do with mass production of food as commodity and food culture as, you know, utterly commodified, and the breakdown of cuisine. If food is produced correctly, not by mass-produced means, not for the way it looks on the shelf, mm-hmm. but its intrinsic quality. People derive more fundamental satisfaction from what they eat. Moreover, if that's linked with good cooking, with old
right.
cuisine, with an integral cuisine and a sense for cooking, there comes satisfaction, there comes the lack of a need to overeat to try to fill this void.
Stick with us, Michael. Gina, pick it up. Michael turns back to what you call the environment. He says, look, we've got industrial food not cooked in a way that's really satisfying, and so, yeah, we're overweight. Why are you cutting us slack on our weight instead of going after the Twinkies and Pringles and, you know, 6-second meals?
Well, you know, that's a hypothesis. But you could also look at somebody like Graciela in my book. She definitely changed her way of eating. She's cooking her own food. She doesn't have processed stuff anymore. She's eating fruits and vegetables. She weighs 212 pounds. If there was a solution that really worked, then I think almost everybody who's struggling this hard would be there at this point.
Why is Europe slimmer than
USA? Well, you have to ask, first of all, you're asking me to tell you what it is in our environment, and I don't know. Nobody knows. But the other thing is, I know everybody's going to say, I look at Europeans, they're thin. But in fact, most countries do not have the kind of data we have where you actually have weighed people. In fact, one scientist said he wanted to ask, like, what's been happening to weights in Europe? Nobody has the national data we have, so we can't really do the comparisons we'd
like to do. But you must get around a little bit. I mean, just walk through airports here and there. It's pretty clear,
you know,
unless that's a skewed sample somehow.
I'm not trying to argue that people aren't fatter. But I will say that we are so attuned to fat now that's the first thing you see is there's a fat person, your eyes go to them, you say, look at that fat person. In fact, I saw a picture in the New York Times the other day, like a month or so ago, a bunch of kids, and they were running. And there was like a whole line of them. There was some soccer camp or something. And I immediately noticed one thing, and I showed the picture to my husband. I said, what's the first thing you see? He said, look at there. There's a fat kid in the front row. I said, that's exactly what I saw. You can't stop yourself.
But it's not just mockery. It's not just
to it. Yeah, no,
but we're
so
hearing about kids, you know. Kids
yeah,
in trouble from diabetes, Gina. I mean,
I really would rather not go there because the diabetes data on kids, the incidence is so low that it is impossible to really track it. So we don't really know whether there's more kids now or not because there are so few. There's many more with type 1 than type 2 still. Mm. But I'm not saying it's not a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that the solution is not obvious because people do have a biological range of weights that they are comfortable, that their body will hold, and you can get to the bottom of your biological range. But if you're somebody like Graciela, and 212 pounds is as low as you can go,
at 5'4",
she's healthy. Believe it or not.
Let me put it to Michael. Michael, you're listening. What do you think? Gina says, "Well, it's not enough to have good food and good cooking.
I just said, it's not enough to change society because if it was, people like Graciela would never have a problem.
Michael?
Well, I agree. I do agree with Gina's basic contention that we have a skewed and unhealthy conception and attitude regarding weight and variability in people's weights and frames and so forth. And I think she's absolutely right in that. We have an obsessive, compulsive, commodity-driven, consumerist attitude about weight that's destroying people. And driving people insane, frankly. But on the other side, I also think that
Gina's here with relief for everybody.
Yes. But I think you can't dismiss, you know, your point, Tom. You go through any airport, and it's pretty plainly obvious that there is a difference between various cultures. Now, she mentions there aren't statistics taken, you know, to the extent they're taken in Europe. But, you know, probably by the time they do the studies, they'll be suffering from the same problems of obesity because they're being Americanized along with
maybe the McDonald's opening on every corner. Michael, thanks for your call.
Well, food is also cheaper.
Yes, Gina.
Food is also much, much cheaper. People used to spend huge amounts of their income on food, and now you can get a lot of food for a very little bit of money. So in a way, you could say, and this is another hypothesis, that food is so cheap that everybody can eat up to their genetic potential.
Right. And so there we are. Boom. Let's take a call from Seymour, Connecticut. Russell, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
We're good. What do you know?
Well, I'm thinking a little bit about the issue of America being obese, and I think a lot of it has to do with our culture of instant gratification. And also, what goes along with that is the easy accessibility that we have to food. I mean, on every corner, there's a Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts. And you go down to your corner office, and you have the vending machine. The accessibility that we have today is obviously something that they didn't have.
Just stick your hand out, and there's a ball of sugar and fat in it.
Just like that, Tom.
Yeah.
And in the quote-unquote old world that you guys were talking about before, one would have to go outside and pick or cook or, I mean, hunt or whatever. The accessibility was not there. And I'd just like to pose that and ask Jeannie, is that probably a huge factor in our wheat issues, especially here in America?
Gina?
That's another hypothesis, and I can't dismiss any of these hypotheses. Mm. I guess I have to say that every one of these things sound totally reasonable, but it's very hard to go beyond saying this makes a lot of sense to saying this is the problem. There are a lot of people. I mean, I wrote this book. I'm actually very thin, mm-hmm. and weight is not an issue for me. Mm. And I thought if I wrote this book, if I wasn't thin, people would say I was making an excuse for myself. But I see this food around me all the time. Mm. There's only so much I can eat without saying I've had enough. And there's a difference. And one researcher said to me something which really struck with me. He said, what makes you think hunger is the same for everybody? Mm. And I thought, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had enough and somebody else wants to keep going. Or I eat a lot one day and the next day I just have no appetite. Somebody else wants to keep going. Their hunger is different. So it's not just having it there. Because, yep. like I said, I couldn't possibly ever be Graciela's weight. I could never even come within 80 pounds of her weight. I mean, there's no way. I just couldn't. And yet, this is the weight. But, you know, she and I are almost the same height. So there we are. You know, there's something else going on besides just having food there. I work in an office where people are always bringing in candy and cookies and putting it on a table. Why is it that, you know, I've had enough and somebody else hasn't? There's something else happening.
Let's get a doctor's voice in here from Rochester, Minnesota. We're joined by Dr. Donald Hensrud. He's a physician specializing in nutrition and weight management, editor of the Mayo Clinic Healthy Weight for Everybody publication. He's a professor at the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine. Dr. Hensrud, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Happy to be here.
So Gina's followed some folks, looked at it, a lot of Americans. Here she's got her friend 5'4", 212 pounds, and Gina's saying, well, maybe that's her natural weight. So, doctor, does that sound okay to you?
Well, I think that there's a number of different facets to the data. First, obesity, we have to establish obesity is a serious health condition. There are multiple health complications from it. And it is responsible. The RAND Corporation estimated it's responsible for more health care dollars spent than any other health condition, including smoking. In terms of genetics versus environment, there is a flip side of that. Genetics absolutely do play a role. It sets the stage. But if you look at one of the best pieces of evidence is the dramatic increase in obesity over the past 30 years at the time when our genes have not changed. So there are multiple collective, pervasive and powerful factors in the environment that are contributing to this. And I'd go so far as to say that it is an interaction between a genetic predisposition and a permissive environment, but certainly the environment, as far as the recent increase in obesity, is playing a powerful role.
Now you say permissive environment, and that gets to kind of the moral judgment that Gina's pushing back against. She's got a different message.
Not at all. In fact, I think we need to separate the personal issues from the health issues, and I absolutely agree. I deal with...
What do you mean by permissive environment, then?
That food is everywhere. If you look at what's happened in our food supply, from 1986 to 1996, the consumption of sugar increased by 25 pounds per person per year. Other factors that have been identified with increasing calorie intake or weight are eating out, portion size. You can look at what portion sizes happen to in many restaurants.
Yeah, but what about the fundamental message here that we should sort of come to terms with our greater weight, not harass ourselves endlessly about it? As a physician who works on this, what do you think of that?
I think there is some truth to that also, that we do have a dieter's mentality. The way I look at it is that it's like a game of draw poker, if I could use a simple analogy. We're dealt a certain hand of cards, but anyone, regardless of the range of genetic predetermined weights that they're going to be in, can improve their hand. Even if people aren't able to get down to their ideal body weight, and I recognize that many people aren't, if they improve their activity, they improve their diet, their health will improve. As evidence that some people can do this, there's the National Weight Control Registry. To get into this, it's a voluntary registry, so it's a selected population.
Yep.
You need to lose 30 pounds and keep it off for a year. Some data a few years ago reported that the average amount of weight loss in this group was 65 pounds, and they kept it off for 5 years. they asked them what were the factors, and there was nothing dramatic or surprising there. They had tried to lose weight many times before, but something happened, a light bulb went on, and they made lifestyle changes in physical activity and the way they were eating. And by doing this, they were able to reach a more healthy weight.
So are you prepared to say to the woman who's 5'4 and 212 pounds, that's okay?
Not to that extent, because I think the danger here is that people look at this and they use this as an excuse to say, well, it's not in my control, it's in my genes. Anyone can improve their health through lifestyle changes. And so I'd say to her, I'd work with her, I wouldn't want her to beat herself up over it, absolutely, and I think we do that too much. But by having the right attitude to start with, a positive attitude about making lifestyle changes rather than a dieter's mentality, which is go on a restrictive, negative diet that isn't going to last, I think people can improve their health.
Dr. Hensrud, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Gina, are you giving people permission to be dangerously overweight?
No, I think I absolutely agree with almost everything that was said, except I would say that if you take this poor woman, Graciela, look at what she says. She said, I don't eat donuts anymore. I know if I make that choice to go to Wawa every morning and get donuts and get the coffee with all the cream, I know that's where that's going to take me. I know there are better choices. I pick organic things. I pick natural things. I pick low-fat things. I don't pick them because I have to. It's what I like eating now. It's become part of me. This is not really a diet. It's a way of life. She also exercises regularly, something she had never done before, and she sees the effects every day. I feel much better. I can run for a train now and not get winded. She weighs 212 pounds. So to say, well, she had spent 2 years. She hired a personal trainer. She went to nutritionist. She did everything. And she's changed her way of life. Can you say to her, do more? I'm not so sure. Now, the National Weight Control Registry is an interesting group. It's about 3,000 people or so.
Right.
You can lose weight anyway. Some of them had bariatric surgery. A lot of them have gained the weight back, and you voluntarily report your weight. So it's interesting that there are always people who have lost weight. You can't say nobody can ever lose substantial amounts of weight. But it's very hard for many people to get down to what's considered a so-called normal or ideal weight. And what I'm trying to say, I'm not saying eat as much as you want, and it doesn't matter about your health, because if you're getting high cholesterol levels, if you're getting high blood sugar levels, if you're getting arthritis, if your back hurts because of your weight, often you can make a big difference in how you feel and how your health by losing some weight.
This sort of mania over weight loss is everywhere. Let's listen here to VH1's Celebrity Fit Club. You've got Dustin Diamond, best known as Samuel Screech Powers, on the television show Saved by the Bell, here just after the show's weigh-in. He just learned that he gained 5 pounds in the last 12 days.
Do you really want to lose weight? If you don't want to lose weight, just man up and say, I don't really care.
Well,
it's okay
that's
with me.
Part of what I said we didn't address. I don't think 184 or 183 or anywhere
you're
near 180.
You're nowhere near there.
It doesn't matter. If I got down to 195, I think that's getting too light for me. And there we go again.
Do you really want to lose? Just man up or woman up on weight loss. Is that what's required here? Let's go to Mary in Florence, South Carolina. Mary, you're on the air with Gina Colata.
Hey, great program. I really applaud you, Gina, for this book. I'm a social worker. I run an eating disorder clinic here in Florence. It's sort of a one-woman operation, and I see women dealing with this issue all of the time, where they go on diets, they lose weight, and then they gain it back, and they're shamed and blamed and end up feeling awful about themselves. And after, you know, 23 years of doing this work, I really feel that the focus needs to be on fitness and not on weight loss. You can't tell whether or not a person is healthy based on the number on the scale. It really is about fitness and whether their blood pressure is okay or their cholesterol is okay. And yes, we're fatter as a nation, but, you know, we're also less fit as a nation, and we can do something about being fit.
And Mary, the shaming and blaming, does it come from inside the people you're dealing with or from their neighbors and all the rest of society?
Oh, from the medical community. I mean, they go to the doctor for something totally unrelated to their size, and it's all about their size. I mean, they're blamed. Everything is blamed on being obese. I mean, and it's ridiculous. Everything doesn't come. All health problems don't come from being fat. I mean, it's ridiculous. I also treat anorexics and you know, to look at just the chart to find out when someone is 15 or 20% below where their body should be,
right.
You know, and that's when you start thinking about hospitalization for them. You know, if I only went to the charts, I wouldn't be getting the whole picture.
Yeah, so
sometimes,
there's the other side of the equation there.
Yeah, sometimes when people lose weight, you know, they start having symptoms of starvation before they reach those, you know, insurance charts that tell you what your BMI is supposed to be.
Mary, we hear it. A kind of thumbs up to Gina Collada right there. Let's take a call from Sarah in Providence, Rhode Island. Sarah, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm not sure. I don't really have a question. My point is I am that person. I'm teetering on 200 pounds, and I've suffered from being overweight since I was like a preteen. I have polycystic ovary syndrome, so I guess it makes me more prone to putting weight on.
Okay.
But this is something that, this is my story, and I just feel like I relate so well to it. And I have to say, it is so nice to hear someone not constantly be blaming us as individuals. Like, and I don't have an overeating problem. I mean, I don't. I eat salads, and I exercise. I go swimming 3 days a week, you know. I do those things, yet I don't get below my weight. And I don't know at this point, other than, like, my nutritionist said it'd take, like, me eating less than 800 calories.
Right. So, Sarah, do you take comfort in this? Are you willing to just accept your weight in some degree, as Gina?
Tom, I don't think people have a choice, really.
Right, exactly.
I mean, it's not like you have a choice to say, I think I'll be thinner.
But we're always told that you do, you know, eat less, exercise more.
Yeah, but you know, the problem is that here are living examples, and in my book is full of them too, of people who did all that and do all that, and their weight is higher than what fashion would dictate or the weight charts would dictate. Once again, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're unhealthy. In fact, there was one big study that the federal government did of people who are obese and on the verge of diabetes. And the question was, if you give them a diet and weight loss program, this extensive, really expensive program, can you prevent them from getting diabetes? And what they discovered was, and this went on for years, you know, they had walking clubs and everything. They couldn't really lose much weight, but they did walk and they could keep that up. And the exercise, exactly what Mary was saying, made a big difference in whether or not their blood sugar went up. But the weight loss was so hard that they lost almost nothing, although they tried desperately. So to say, well, you can't be healthy unless you're thin, is stigmatizing people who have usually tried everything in creation. And absolutely, Mary was right about the doctors, too. There are people in my book who say they couldn't find a doctor. It took them years because every time they walked in, no matter what was wrong with them, the doctor would say, you're fat. I mean, that was the first word out of the doctor's mouth. You've got to lose weight. You have an earache. You're fat. You know, it just went on like that. It was crazy.
Sarah, are you prepared to make peace with it, or do you anticipate an endless battle?
It is an endless battle. Like, to this day, I'll go into a store, you know, and want so badly to be that 14, you know, so much. Mm. And I'm just not, and I'll sit in the changing room and just cry, because it is something that it just feels like it's not something. And I want to be thinner, you know, like I have that desire and want, and I'll continue it. And especially, I have not even had children yet. And that's the terrifying thing is, like, I'm this weight now. What is going to happen if I do make the choice to have children someday? And things like this constantly. I mean, I think of it every day, several times.
Wow, Gina, you can really hear that anxiety that you describe in the book, Gina.
There is this anxiety. And there were studies when Mary said there are people who lose weight and they are not healthy even though they look normal, there are studies that I talk about in my book where they took overweight, very fat people actually, not just a little bit overweight, and they put them in a hospital and got them thin. And they looked normal, and they were very happy because they're down to their supposedly ideal weight, but biologically they were anorexic. They were obsessed with food. Their metabolism had slowed way down. Their thyroid hormone was down. All the changes in anorexia, they had them. The women stopped menstruating. The same thing happened. They took normal weight men and asked them to lose a bunch of weight for a study, which is also in my book. And they became very thin. They dieted and exercised, and they were they were crazy. They were so obsessed with food, and they were like anorexics.
But
they
Sarah's
used to, they
a
were.
Long way from anorexic. That's
it doesn't
not her
matter.
Problem.
These people, when they went below their body's normal weight range, they were biologically like people who were anorexic. You would look at them and say, "Hey, they're not even thin." For them, they were way too thin. Mm. So there, you have to, you know, it's hard to accept this, but I'd like to be taller. I can't be taller. And I'd like to run faster. I can't run any, I train, I can get as good as I can. I will never run a 4-minute mile, no matter what I do. I'd like to sleep less than 8.5-9 hours a night. I love sleep. I can't do it. I just can't train myself.
I'm all for peace of mind about things, and to you and to Sarah, absolutely. And Sarah, thanks for
your call.
Peace
of mind, it's more like understanding what science has said. It's not saying, there's been decades of science. They don't just say this might happen. They know the brain pathways. They know a lot of the genes. They've actually found genetic abnormalities that are making some people fat. They just don't know what to do about it. But they know all this stuff. So it's not saying let's give excuses, let's get peace of mind. It's saying let's respect the fact that there actually is a body of science here that explains what people see in their everyday lives. And it's not that people can't lose weight sometimes to a certain extent, but they can't all be what we say a person should look like.
Yep. Sarah, good luck to you, and thanks for calling. Joyce is calling from Barrington, Rhode Island. Joyce, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
Very well. What do you know, Joyce?
Well, I'm glad you took my call because I'd like to say that I disagree with just about everything that Gina has said so far based on my own personal experience.
What do you mean?
I was very overweight for about 20 years, starting from childhood or adolescence, early adulthood, and then I changed my life, and I've been thin for like 25 years now.
Has it been torture, or it's felt good? What do you make of your story?
It was very hard when I started, but then it got easier and easier and easier, and I am the way she describes herself now. Like, if I eat too much, it actually hurts. I can't do it. And I have to tell you, I was miserable when I was overweight, and I had rashes, and I was just miserable. I can't even tell you. And I'm so much happier now.
But Joyce, when you look now, when you look at fellow Americans or whoever who is still overweight, how do you think? Oh, you could lose that if you wanted to, or do you think, well, maybe they're different from me? Maybe they just have a natural base setting.
No, I do think people could lose it, and I don't think people are honest with themselves as to why they're not. And I have to say, I came from an Italian family. All of us were fat. We were all fat at the same time. My mother died from diabetes.
Yeah.
My father had quintuple bypass surgery, and,
Joyce, hang on. Gina, what do you say to Joyce, Joyce and her story here?
I think it's terrific that she's had such success, but I can say that there's been an awful lot of research, and I saw it with my own eyes when I was following those dieters, that there are people who you couldn't try harder. You honestly could not try harder, and they can't do what you did. So, I'm really glad for you, but...
Joyce?
I see people dieting. It's when I finally stopped dieting that I got thin. I dieted like crazy for 20 years, but it's when I finally stopped dieting.
And started what? Just what?
Well, I started being at peace with myself. That was the beginning, and I had just more or less resigned myself to stop fighting. And then I did take up meditating, and I meditate every day and have been for over 20 years. And I have to tell you, it changed my life and it changed my body, and I'm very healthy.
That's great.
The thing she says that she can never run a 4-minute mile, I can't either, but I can do all kinds of physical activity now that I couldn't do before.
Yeah.
So I think you sell people short when you say you're just not able to do things.
Joyce, we hear it. It's sounding like a little different package for everybody here. Let's go to Hayes in Enosburg Falls, Vermont. Hayes, you're on the air.
Hello there.
Hi.
Thank you for raising this very important issue. You touched on it, Tom, at the very beginning by stating, in my opinion, one of the most important things, and that is that if we look into our history, the photographic record or medical records or anthropological records, you see that people were not as unhealthy as we are now.
Well, they weren't as fat, but they were shorter too, Gina says, so maybe we just changed.
They were very unhealthy. I wrote a big story about this for the Times, and I was shocked. By age 40, tell you that I've looked into this, I've written about this. The health conditions of people in the 1800s, early 1900s were shockingly, unbelievably bad.
Perhaps
unbelievable.
In inner cities. I would agree in the urban environments.
I would say the countryside, too. Honestly,
Hayes, where would you take that idea anywhere, Hayes? Where do you want to go with that?
Yes. Well, okay, very simply. Back in the 30s, Weston Price, who is a well-known dentist, went around the world and studied these cultures. He studied cultures in the Swiss Alps and in Africa and off of the coast of Ireland, cultures that had been somewhat untouched. And he looked at their bodies, in particular their dentures, their skulls.
Okay, so?
And took that as a barometer as to how healthy they were. And then he looked at their diets, and he came up with some very simple, basic premises that existed basically globally as to how a human being could eat to maintain a healthy lifestyle, body and other things. And he then brought that information back to America and has disseminated it through the Weston Price Foundation. Obviously, he's since...
But how do we know if it makes sense? I mean, that sounds like the sort of narrative of so many dieting books. You know, I went to Miami, I went to South Beach, I saw this, I ate grapefruit, I discovered the fountain of eternal youth or thinness. How do you know he's right?
Exactly. I mean, that's a very good question. For one thing, he has the evidence in the photographic record of what happens to the dentures, the teeth, the brain skull size, the brain cavity.
Yeah, so our time is short, but we see, Hayes, you found your kind of icon there, and a lot of people have found one to follow. Not everybody does. Let me get one more call. Mike from Boston. Mike, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I just have to comment. You know, I've been, I guess, supposedly overweight for my entire life, and, you know, I look up my ideal weights on these charts, and it says whatever I am overweight to borderline obese, and you know, I'm someone that I run 2 or 3 miles a day, lift 4 or 5 times a week, and, you know, my body sticks at a particular weight, and do I feel guilty about it? Yes, I do. Do I loathe getting on the scale? Yes, I do. But I still have to just accept the fact that this, biologically, genetically, or for whatever reason, is where my body wants to be.
So does Gina make you feel a little better with her research and analysis here?
Definitely, because I think there's just such an emphasis on that final number, independent of, you know, what you do or what you look like or whatever. And it's I do totally believe you can be, you know, 10, 15, 20 pounds, quote-unquote, overweight and still be healthy.
Mike, good luck with that. Right there. Gina, we've only got a couple of minutes here. Give your big picture advice then. You've got people listening who are always being advised on dieting. You've got a little more of a holistic view. You know Americans are obsessed with this, so what do you say to them?
I say it's very difficult to be fat in this society, but everybody has been at the knows their biological limits inside. Almost everybody knows how low they can really go. And you have to, and when you try to, when you gain weight back, when you've been trying to lose it, you have to kind of come to terms with it, accept yourself and say, I can be healthy, I can look good, I can be fit, I can make good food choices, but I may not be as skinny as the charts say I should be or as skinny as fashion says, but that's just the way I am. Just like I have curly hair or straight hair or I need contact lenses or eyeglasses, there are just some things you honestly can't change, and if I could remake the world, I would let us all try to accept people for who they are.
Do doctors shake a stethoscope at you when you say that, or are they coming on board a little bit too?
I've had so many emails from doctors saying, thank goodness somebody is saying this. Now, maybe I'm just hearing from the people who love it, and they're the ones who write to me, but I've had a lot of people. I've had people who run weight loss clinics write to me and say, Gina, it's about time somebody finally said this because we all know it's true.
Gina Collada, science writer for The New York Times. The new book is Rethinking Thin. Gina, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was really fun.
Interesting. Really interesting talking with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.